You're listening to New Soundwave with your hosts, J.D. Church, Ender, John DeLuna, Rob Springer, Chris Triplett, and Brian Kilby.
And you are listening to New Soundwave. This is New Soundwave Special Edition Iron Man 2, in which we'll be talking exclusively. Not exclusive in the sense of we're the only ones, but in the sense that that's the only thing we're going to be talking about is going to be Iron Man 2 today.
Because Iron Man does whatever an iron can.
Actually, that did happen. But we'll get there. So this is going to be exciting because we're only talking about one thing. We're going to talk about it for a while, and there's so much to cover. I don't know how we're even going to do this. So who wants to go and give us a good synopsis of this film? I elect Triplett. No?
How spoilerific are we getting?
This is all out. This, if you and
people,
we'll leave
people
with
listening
that,
to
I
the
mean,
show are not going to wait on our opinion whether or not to decide to see the movie.
Yeah. But if you they're waiting on our opinion to see this movie.
That's funny.
If you haven't seen the movie, turn off now.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So we're going all out.
Because even if you were gonna like it after this.
Wow.
All you'll be thinking of is us.
Yeah. I'll lead off. So basically here Iron Man's story for this film almost leaves off immediately where the previous film ended, in which Tony's revealing to the world that he is in fact Iron Man. This leads to the introduction of a character, Ivan, I can't remember his last name. There's a V in it. Anyway, it's Russian. Vanko, thank you. So, basic story of Fall, it's a revenge story for the early part of the film. I'm not very good at synopsis, apparently. Anyway, a lot of stuff happens. Who's
okay.
better at this?
Okay. All right,
Enter,
so we kick off. We kick off. We start out right after the first movie, and we have a brief little moment in which we see the revelation of Iron Man killing the father of Ivan, whatever the heck, and he makes his own arc reactor. Is basically what happens there. Then we cut forward 6 months, and Iron Man is the Iron Man we all know and love. He is a superhero. He has kicked butt all around the world, and everything is all peachy keen everywhere because Tony Stark is so cool, and he's having a great time being Iron Man. The government is real heavy on him to turn the suit over, and he tells them where to stick it. The senator played by Gary Shandling. Fairly
very
amusing.
Looking Gary Shandling, too.
Yeah.
Yes.
and even so going so far as to have Rhodey testify against him. They introduce Justin Hammer, who is, of course, like, you know, the talentless dickweed version of Tony Stark.
I love
played
him.
By the fantastic Sam Rockwell. And
great
we move on. Yeah, we see that Tony is dying from having the arc reactor in his chest. What's the element called? It's killing him.
Palladium.
Palladium, thank you. The palladium in the arc reactor
is
slowly
rule
poisoning him.
Show.
Yeah, that's what we keep
you're
around
the
for. he's kind of setting himself up for being dead soon. He doesn't think he's going to survive very long. And in fact, we go so far as to have a little countdown ticker of him dying. They give us a little visual aid.
Yeah.
He has like a little pocket clicker in his pocket that tells him how close to death he is. So he is then attacked by Ivan, who has a little whiplash tendril thing going on. They have a little fight. Ivan is captured, but swiftly released by Hammer to build him suits that don't suck, because the ones he's building do suck. we spend a good portion of the movie in Tony's downward spiral of his health and stuff, and, you know, very, very good Tony Starkish story of him being a drunken moron. He gets his crap back together when he gets, you know, spiffy little message from the past from his dad. He makes loses the Mark II suit in a fight with Rhodey at a drunken party. And that suit goes on to become War Machine at the hands of Hammer. And let's see. So he overcomes his palladium
problem.
And
there is a fight.
Yeah, he overcomes his palladium problem, and they all go fight it out with lots of big iron drones made by Jerky, who then shows up. And I don't know if we're calling him Titanium Man or not. He had the tendrils still, so he's like Titanium Whiplash.
He's half man. Crimson Dynamo, half yeah. Whiplash.
Right. There we go.
And the only Titanium Man and thing about him is that he's sort of green.
Yeah, like yeah, 10%
that's what I mean. Like, it's like, okay, so he's green. He's green. He's got the tendrils, and he's from Russia. I'm like, what the hell am I supposed to do with that?
But it's like Anton. It's like his dad, Anton Vanko. Anton Vanko was the name of the first Crimson Dynamo. And if you right. look at the passport that he gets from whoever it is that he gets. The name on there, Boris Turgenev, yeah, is
that
the
looked familiar to
second,
me too.
The second Crimson Dynamo.
So he's, well, it seems like we're going with Crimson Dynamo then. Okay. Yeah. So he's more.
He's
more
basically
Crimson,
Crimson Dynamo story, but with whips.
Yeah.
Hey, the whips were cool looking though.
Yeah.
The whips were
cool. No argument.
It worked.
Okay, yeah, so that's the movie.
Basically, yeah.
Oh, and then after the credits, we see Thor's hammer.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we do. That's right. Yeah.
Yes.
Here's the summary.
So maybe we could talk about the film from an elemental standpoint. As an overall story, what did we think? I mean,
okay.
As far as just the story itself.
Weaker than the first one.
It was much weaker. But the first movie, story-wise, was kind of weak, too.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that it's any.
I disagree with everything that was just said. I don't think there's anything weak about the story here.
Really?
I don't think it's. No, I don't think it's any weaker than the first.
What? It's certainly no. Yeah. Certainly weaker than the first one. What the first one had sort of the legendary origin quality, which
is great.
I mean, like it's hard to get. You know what I mean? Like get past like the creation of the character. I mean, they can't. Create him every movie. You know what I mean? There's a climax to that that can't be beat in some ways. It's like the beginning and the end are really the great parts. The middle, you always are just kind of, you know, he just had to be Iron Man this movie. And that
like,
had
to
the movie.
In the middle of the first Iron Man movie, really, you get the feeling in the first movie when he goes off to blow up those tanks that he really just sort of does that because it's about time there was an action sequence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like, the action sequences in this one come when it feels like the plot actually demands something to happen rather than that. I mean,
which happens.
I don't think it's any. I don't think it's any better than the first one in terms of story. But it's as good as. It's just that it lacks the as you say, under the legendary quality of an origin to elevate it. It's an artificial elevation, but I don't think it's any better or worse on that front.
I'd struggle to think of like any action or adventure movie, at least in my mind, in the last like 10 years that had a better story.
I think that the one thing that I liked about this the second film better than the first is that I felt like because this film had a better driving plot line because there was an actual villain, whereas in the first film I sort of felt that Stane was sort of working behind the scenes, and that really at the end of the day he wasn't necessarily opposed to Tony as much as he was just trying to save his own ass.
Yeah, well, it was a real gear shift in the first movie villain wise because even though we find out that Stane was the impetus behind what was happening to Tony, his first set of villains are very self-contained. And that was really the origin story. I mean, it continues off to the... And it really, when you think about it, the deal is, and this is sort of a dichotomy problem of Iron Man's origin, is there is the Iron Man origin story in which he's in the cave and builds the suit, but you don't want that to continue to be the suit. And... the way that happened in the comics is that was just the story when it started. It was just him in that suit, and that suit was going to stay. But over the years, Iron Man, you know, very swiftly evolved into something else. And you had to get the original origin and then the origin of what we're used to seeing be Iron Man all into one movie. So you literally had, like, the origin in the cave, and then the movie, like, kind of slipped into limbo where he was just building the suit, and then it was just like, you know, the gear shifted and ka-chunked into Stane being the villain underneath, and he was just there all of a sudden.
Yeah, you know? And it was, and he wasn't like a he wasn't driving the plot, whereas within this film, you actually had a villain who really had it in for Tony.
And he had a bird.
That element.
And he had a bird.
He had a bird, yeah.
He had a bird. And even for Justin, even Justin Hammer, I wouldn't say he's necessarily a villain. I didn't get the sense that he wanted to kill Tony literally. He wanted to, you know, defeat him, yeah, economically or embarrass him publicly.
He was a plot device.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
He's an asshole, but you know.
Yeah. You love Dave. He's a good role. I enjoyed him in it.
Yeah.
The thing I loved about the Justin Hammer character was that you get the feeling that he's exactly like Tony, except he lacks Tony's charisma. So that they're
he can't make anything work.
Talent.
And the talent. So, okay, no charisma, no talent.
So he's nothing like Tony.
He's anti-Tony Stark.
Well, it's a great little bit where he, like, dances out on stage.
Yes.
And you can tell he thinks he looks so cool. Yeah.
If Tony did that, it would have been like, oh, he's amazing. But, you know, Hammer doesn't. It's like, you're a dork. So, yeah, which I think dork, is probably the best. Yeah. I mean, he's a great describer for that character. He's just a dork. He just doesn't.
But he's awesome. Story-wise, everybody had reasons for what they were doing. You know what I mean? Like, there was a character arc for everybody. You know, the villain had a very clear motivation. Pepper had a very clear motivation. Tony's, you know, whole little, you know, character arc was a very classic, you know, up and downfall character, you know.
The rise and the fall and rise of Tony Stark.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, you know.
But then in a way, like, the fall and rise of Tony Stark is the first movie, too.
Yeah.
But then this is what I said when I...
See, go ahead, Jack.
I said that's what I said last time when I dropped a few comments on it in Fanboy Versus, was that, like, thematically it is similar to the first movie heavily. You've even got a running subplot about how, you know, his health is in danger again, and he has to, you know, at the point whenever he started hammering a load of stuff together in his lab to save his life, I thought somebody might have spliced a reel from the first movie back in, you know.
Well,
I sort of feel like that wasn't needed. I mean, because he's sick, and he's also drinking more, and he's also, you know, I don't know. It just seemed like it was heavy on little plot line stuff, you know?
But that's what held him. That's at the end, I think that's really what holds it together and makes it a solid movie, is that
each plot line led into the next, and it's like if you take any one of those out, I guess it falls apart. But I don't know, if one of the other plots could have been stronger, then maybe you didn't need Tony to be sick.
I don't think the central plot, really.
Yeah.
I
don't think we would ever see them take him the full, like, alcoholism route.
I think they've talked about, I think we saw a build towards that.
I think that's probably the darkest we'll see him, to be honest.
I would not want to watch a movie. I would not want to watch a Demon in the Bottle movie. It would be depressing. No.
I wouldn't put it past them doing it.
But with this, they did. Tony gets drunk in the suit and becomes a danger to others. So, you know, how much more?
That's as much as I want to see.
Yeah, as much as you want to see, really. That's true. They might have taken that to the word. Could go and be good.
What do you think about? Did they go back to the well too much? Do you think in this film?
That's just what jumped out at me. Yeah, the themes of Tony being in danger and having to clobber some new armor together while he alienates everybody around him and his company spirals the pan. That middle bit seemed like it was very much retreading the themes of the first film.
I didn't think so, because he didn't really come out of that in the first film. And you know what I mean? Like, his company was not doing any better at the end of that movie than it was in the middle. This is, you know, this was a different thing, and this was about, that movie was much more about Tony Stark becoming a decent person. This was about Tony Stark, like, enduring becoming a superhero. This was a very, it reminded me of like a Spider-Man kind of, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
well, like, but for the better part of the
film, to have the whole world depend on you.
But for the better part of the film, for the better part of the film, though, Tony thinks he's dying. I mean, that's the whole reason that he lets Rhodey take the other suit.
Everything he does is motivated by him dying. Everything he does, you know, giving Pepper the big job and, you know, his drinking, I mean, it's all motivated by that, and it's pretty depressing.
Yeah, in a sense. Although I was never depressed while watching
the conflict. That's what makes the movie go.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying that,
like, it'd be really bland and...
No,
I'm just saying they should have taken it out. It's just that, you know,
we'd all be sitting here just going like, yeah, he just fought that dude, and then he fought that dude, and then we went home.
No, it gives it
depth. It's a question of going at it from a different angle. We got the rise and fall of Tony Stark again, so... no, I mean, as I said, it's as good as the first movie, like, in terms of story. It's that the envelope isn't pushed, I don't think, and that's the worst thing I can say about it. Honestly,
I think action-wise, they pushed the envelope.
I think the positive thing I can say about it is that Jon Favreau has gotten really better at doing action scenes.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because that scene at the end of the first movie, I thought I was watching Cloverfield at some points. And it just looks better, and the tension's better, and I think the conclusion was a whole lot better in the second movie.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the action
was... learned a lot from it. I think they had the budget for it. They didn't have to spend as much time. They had more time to set up a villain for the end.
I mean, how cool is it to see Iron Man and War Machine just tearing through a whole bunch of armored droid things and oil spewing all over War Machine, almost like blood? Yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah, well, that's just it. They knew they wanted to have Iron Man and War Machine. They had to have a fight with something that would be a plausible threat.
Yeah. My problem.
And I think they spent the right amount of time setting those things up.
Yeah.
So you could have enough of a fight. They had a good long fight. They had a flying thing. They had that whole section with each other, and then they had a climax. I mean, the sort of double action climax is another real classic, you know, action movie move to have. Like, okay, we have, like, you know, your climax villain, and as soon as you beat that, the slightly bigger one shows up. I mean, you know, just like the Alien Queen.
I do wish that Whiplash hadn't been a bloke in armor.
Yeah.
Because it does. I mean, it's like dangerously back into ironmongerish territory.
Absolutely.
It's very indistinct armor.
If it
had even been red, it would have been cool.
It would have been red, it would have been nicer.
My problem with the movie is this movie takes place in the same universe that the Incredible Hulk exists, that Thor will exist, that Captain America will exist, that all these things will exist, yet he fights technology-based enemies.
No,
again.
You know, that's because these movies are self-reliant. I can't disagree with that. It means you're
self-reliant. I know.
I only have to believe one stupid thing to watch this movie.
I know. I'm not saying...
The minute... This is why they're worried about doing the Avengers things, and this is why they're trying to tie it...
I am in no way saying that, you know, that the leader should show up or Fing Fang Foom, but I'm saying that something else besides more robots...
Shouldn't show up?
I'm saying something besides just robots, you know, more people in suits. I mean, it's a complete retread of Iron Man 1.
The word magic in these movies,
doesn't have
they
to be
will
magic.
End.
Yeah, the Mandarin will suck. If they go in the Mandarin direction, it'll suck, but the movie, it just doesn't, it doesn't go far enough to distinguish itself from the first movie. The first movie is revelatory. The first movie is amazing. This movie doesn't step far enough away from the first movie to be something on its own. And it was good, but it wasn't great. It was okay.
Yeah,
I thought it was fantastic. I don't know what you're talking about.
It was really okay. I walked out not hating it, but thinking, man, I shouldn't have bothered with the midnight showing.
Yeah, I felt kind of bad about seeing it at midnight showing because I felt like, well, it's just... I mean, it's not a waste, but still,
it was a solid.
Like, I think I could have waited.
Yeah, it was a two and a half, 3-star
movie.
Movie
I've seen since Iron Man.
Oh God, no! Not even.
So one of the things that internal things maybe for the film. One of the things, of course, was the recasting of Rhodey, previously played by Terrence Howard, now played by Don Cheadle. What did you think of the changes that were made, not only maybe from a writing standpoint for that character, but also by having a new actor?
I like how they introduced him and how they basically said, you know, Rhodey, you're here, they called you. He says, yeah, I'm here, let's just move on.
There might as well have been a voiceover going, the role of James Rhodey.
But that's the way it should be, though, because I think writing consistency-wise, I applaud when they just replace the actor. Yeah. I'm sorry, I hate when they do something stupid like that. That's sort of something they should have done in Star Trek. Every time somebody quit, screw you. Get a new guy. Just move on next week.
Yeah.
I think this was totally the right thing to do, and it made it so the writing was very consistent.
I didn't buy Terrence Howard in the first movie. He was too soft-spoken and not... He lacked the hard edge Rhodey should have. I couldn't see Terrence Howard doing what Don Cheadle did in that film.
Yeah, Don Cheadle was strong. He was very strong.
I wish he'd grown a beard, but, you know.
Well, he also seemed like he could actually engage with Tony Stark. Like, it seemed like it was supposed to be that way in the first movie,
he's Tony's little friend who happens to be a colonel. You know, Don Cheadle is on his level.
I kind of buy Don Cheadle as Rhodey, but I didn't so much as buy him whenever that helmet would pop up and I'd see his face in the suit. It just kind of looked weird.
Needed a beard.
He needed a beard, exactly. There you go.
Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow.
Call that a beard.
Yeah.
You know, Triplett and I were talking about Black Widow. While she didn't really capture the essence of the character, she still looked awesome in the costume, so I really didn't care.
I could have went with another 20 minutes of footage.
Yeah.
If they could have cut something out, though, it was her.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say, Andrew. You said everybody had their story arc, but she didn't.
I'm just hoping she's going to be in the Avengers.
I mean, I would have to assume that's the only reason she's in this, frankly.
Yeah.
So, we got more than 10 lines or 4 lines out of Samuel L. Jackson, obviously, in this film. What do we think of this universe's version of Nick Fury?
Doesn't bother me, but I like going back to what Ender said before. You know, he doesn't want to see the Hulk or anything like that. I agree with that, and I don't want to see Nick Fury in the movie. You know, like at the very end, that's fine, but him actually being in the movie just throws it.
Because I do want to see an Avengers movie. I'd like to see them do that well, but I don't want to see.
Shield is so connected with Iron Man. Why wouldn't I want to see it?
Because it's an Iron Man movie.
Iron Man in the Avengers movie. But I don't want to see the Avengers in an Iron Man movie. I don't mind characters from that universe that make sense, but I just mean, like, you know, if they make the next Batman movie and the villain is, you know, Brainiac, we're all going to be, you know, like...
That would be a little left field. Yeah.
So does that mean you hated the ending, our little ending teaser that we got? Because that's not...
enough from the movie. I don't know, it was a hammer on the ground. It doesn't destroy the movie.
Yeah, and it's entirely separate from the movie.
If Silver had showed up and, like, smacked the crap out of, you know, Mickey Rourke at the end, I would have been really pissed off.
I mean,
I would have liked that.
Actually, I'm Loki. I've been like, yeah, I don't know about that.
I mean...
I smote thy frost giant Iron Avenger.
I mean, S.H.I.E.L.D. and Nick Fury were directly responsible for the Deus Ex Machina that popped up to solve Tony's problem of his sickness. I mean, the whole scene, you know, where Tony found the mock-up of the city of the future that his dad developed and, you know, did the wireframe of it, that just seemed really stilted and forced to me.
I don't know how much of a Deus Ex Machina
because they made it very clear that they made him functional again, but he was still just as dying.
Well, no, it's just, but, you know, it's like, oh, he has a new power source that his dad created, but it's a very ultimate Spider-Man sort of thing.
Yeah, he had it. Yeah, exactly. It was sort of like, here's a gift to you that you don't know that you'll need, but you're going to need it. Yeah, it was very, that was one of the two plot points where I was sort of a bit confused, where it was like, you know, the solution came
know
before
his
the
life
answer.
Was going to depend on it.
No, but
he was going to be fantastically rich.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, well, yeah. You know, it just so happens that his life depended on it.
Yeah, but the sentiment wasn't quite there. Like, there was the whole emotional connection in the film. Like, son, you know, here's the future. Or what I don't know, but
if somebody a gold mine, it turns out that they were dying of something and needed to eat some gold.
Yeah,
I mean
mine wasn't a good gift.
You're exactly right. That's true. It's just ridiculously convenient that happened to be exactly what he needed. And
yeah, exactly. I mean, that's kind of I think what I'm.
He was
saying,
able to build this in a cave with a box of scraps. I don't know. I didn't have trouble buying any of that.
What's gonna make him sick in the next
that lab of his? So cool. Yeah. I don't care. He could come up with anything in that room. I think anyone could design anything in that room.
Well, I pretty much foresaw that the model was going to be a.
Yeah, I called that.
I thought it was going to be a circuit board rather than an atomic diagram. But
to be. Did you sense a little bit of retcon that was?
it was just the way it was
wire looking things on it.
Yeah, and then all he needed was the globe.
Speaking of Howard Stark, actually, it was just a little thing, but I really liked their portrayal of Howard Stark in this little
thing. Yeah, I love them bringing that back up, because they touched on it a little in the first movie that he had some issues with his dad. And I really like them go back to that.
It was like he was half Walt Disney, half Howard Hughes.
Exactly, I love that.
Yes.
It was like something out of the magical world of Disney with his pastel-covered office.
It reminded me of something from Venture Brothers, you know, whenever you see the footage of his dad, you know.
But yeah.
Follow me, Rusty!
I liked how when his dad had a few drinks, he started acting more like Tony.
Yeah, just like Venture Brothers.
How much
dad.
They were alike. Yeah,
it was just such. It was such a little part of the film, but I really liked it. And you know that little Stark Expo song was actually composed by some vintage Disney composer.
Really?
Oh, really?
That's nice. So that's why it sounded so genuine.
Cool.
Listening to it playing.
That's awesome.
So one thing, of course, that we always notice, and John Favreau is great on, is being able to. And I had one of the discussions I had with a man. I want to see what your take on is. Comparing, say, John Favreau to Zack Snyder, whereas Zack Snyder seems to be really great at taking a comic book and visually making it appear on screen, even though story-wise it may not be as such, do you think John Favreau may be better at actually capturing the essence of what
what it should have been about originally.
And should have been about and putting it on screen. I mean, just like little things that end up in the script, like Tony talking to Fury and basically saying that he might take the job as Secretary of Defense if it paid well or something. You know, it was just...
Yeah.
Snyder doesn't add anything to the story. He's good at transcribing it. I mean, you know, he doesn't do anything to make it better. Favreau has the ability to actually improve upon the original source and make it make more sense.
He's able to be honor it without being reverential, and Snyder falls into the trap of just revering it too much.
That's part of the thing I was talking about with War for Cybertron this week, was how much I felt like it had found the essence. So I think that's much more important than, you know, sticking to the lines.
Absolutely, yeah. But if you can get in a cameo appearance from Mrs. Arbogast, that doesn't hurt either.
I have to say that one of the nice little misdirects that is great that was done was with the shield sequence when he pulls up the shield, he's like, "This is what I needed," and the agent's like, "Where did you get that?" And he's like, "No, this is it." And you have that moment, like, in your head, and I was like, "Oh, it's the vibranium. He must need, you know, something." No, he just needed to.
Yeah, I was starting to get a little annoyed
because
they can't do that here because this is Iron Man's film. You can't introduce that, and you'll need. Oh, okay.
I just to get a little
just jammed it under.
Just
to get annoyed, he didn't name the element.
Yeah.
Was going to name it Starkanium or something.
Just to get a little nerdy, I just want to say, if there was vibranium or adamantium in that shield, it would not have been in parts like that. So.
Well, that I believe right. there was a comic included with the DVD of the first movie that established that that's a some sort of prototype recreation Howard Stark was trying to do.
Gotcha.
And that's what it's in pieces.
So I want to start off maybe or see maybe either because I have two nitpicks and I may be totally off on one, but I think I'm good on the other. But one would be at the sequence for the Monaco in Monaco. How did it seem like Whiplash knew that Stark was going to be on the track, since that's where he'd set himself up? I mean, he knew. I get that he knew that Stark was going to be there because of the race and because he had sponsored a car there, but the fact that he was like on the track and had positioned himself there instead of, say, you know, I don't know, in the wait staff or something.
I think he wanted to create chaos. He wanted Iron Man to come out and face him. I think that's why he was doing what he was doing.
Just lucked out that he was on the track.
He just lucked out he was on the track. Yeah. He hit his car.
Yeah.
I will say it did strike me as mighty convenient placement-wise, but...
Yeah.
I mean, it was clear he knew that Stark was going to be there. What he was going to do may have changed based on that. And there might have been some point at which Tony was scheduled to be by the track.
Yeah.
You know.
And that's why I said
like a little bit more normal, and he just took his opportunity. But they did not establish that. So, I mean, that's apologist thinking, which I try to shy away from.
I can't say I even thought about it.
Big thing, because I knew why he was in the vicinity, but his placement did seem mighty convenient.
I didn't think about it. I was too busy going, briefcase armor!
Case armor, oh my god, yeah.
And I have to say that I almost feel like I wish they wouldn't have put that in the trailer now, because I think that if it hadn't been in there and that happened in the theater, I would have crapped.
Yeah,
that would have been fantastic.
It certainly didn't do anything to make me need to see the movie more, to put it in the trailer.
Yeah, because I was already set.
Yeah.
The only other nitpick that I have with the film, and this is going to be totally stupid, or maybe not totally stupid. Anyway, I thought they did a great job with Pepper in the film, establishing her as a stronger female character. Putting her as CEO of Stark, you get to the end of the film and she's even like taking over at the convention center, you know, calls the police in, directing the computer tech, you know, being a good, strong female character. And then you get to the very, very end, and the suits are all blowing up, and Tony has to swoop in and save her. I hated that. I absolutely hated that.
She's not fireproof.
Because I feel like it undermined the strength of that character.
I don't feel like the strength that they had established for her was in any way affected by her inability to survive small thermonuclear blasts.
Yeah, I agree.
But it wasn't necessary. I don't think that's what I'm saying.
It was necessary for the climax of the romantic plotline.
Yes. So, JD, would it have been better if he would have saved Happy, for example?
Well,
I think it would have been hysterical if he said
I think it would have been a lot funnier.
And Happy walks out and is like, Tony.
Well, and I would say if it would have been both of them, I would have been okay with that. But the fact that it was like just her and it's the girl tied to the railroad tracks. It's the damsel.
But she was only in distress by virtue of the fact that she was like being responsible about her company. And then, you know, and the fact that she was in something that was going to explode. I mean, it would have been a danger to him.
But that's what I'm saying. The writer has the choice of whether or not they're putting those explosions there. They weren't necessary for the story. There's other ways to have
that. They were necessary for the story arc. They were the climax of the story arc. They were to give us the last few moments of climax that lead up to the conclusion of the romantic plotline. It served a purpose, so I don't see a problem with it.
And what's the point of a movie about a hero if he's not going to save anybody?
Yeah, Tony Stark saves his own ass. Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole point of the whole point of the climax, is that Tony cowboys up and actually gets in there to save people instead of
wandering around drinking.
Instead of blowing crap up with his repulsors.
Eating
there's
donuts
a trailer
inside of
for the movie
donuts.
On the TV right now.
So, anyway, like I said, I don't know. It may be stupid, but I mean, that's... The inherent feminist in me really hates it when they just put women in distress. And
before we get
feel
gone,
like that's the only way to resolve a romantic plot line.
Well, but I think the focus there, it wasn't so much, you know, if you could very easily remove the woman from that situation and call it his significant other in distress, and if he'd been porking happy, it would have felt just as important for Tony to go and save him. I don't, you know what I mean? I don't feel like it's like, it's because she's a girl.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I can't say it bugged me at all.
Andrew's right.
Before we stop, one thing I want to ask, and I want to get you guys' opinion, is do we want an Iron Man 3?
Of course.
Yes, and I want
and
the man
four,
to be.
Five, yes. Six, thank you very much. Yes.
No, really. Do we need an Iron Man 3?
I don't need I don't need an Avengers tomorrow. Movie, but I do need an Iron Man 3.
Tomorrow?
No, I mean, Avengers. Avengers is happening. Why do we need Iron Man 3 now?
I would rather have Iron Man 3 than Avengers.
I'd rather Iron Man 3, 4, 5, and 6 than Avengers at all.
Yeah, period.
I think there's more story to tell, and I think that if they can get away from the armor war stuff.
Well, they've done that,
basically. And that's what I'm saying. There's more.
But then that's what goes back to what we were saying. Like, the movie didn't really allow us to escape the armored body. That will allow it. It didn't make the thematic leap that will make the Mandarin an easy sell in the second. Which Favreau had been saying when he was talking about the films earlier is that he was approaching a very sort of Star Wars approach to it. You couldn't have people wandering around shooting lightning out of your fingers in A New Hope. They had to build up and slowly grow the power of the Force through the Star Wars before you could have the Emperor doing that in the third one. And ultimately, like, if that was what they were attempting to sort of broaden the scope of what the universe is. If what the universe can contain and how far your disbelief can be suspended in the second one to take a little further and accommodate the Mandarin
like
in the third, they didn't really.
They so minorly touched on the fighting another armored character in the first movie. I mean, that dude built that suit like 10 seconds earlier and there were exactly two suits. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't feel like that was the extent to which that plot line should be carried. I mean, I just think a big theme of Iron Man has been the danger of that technology's, you know, proliferation. And they really didn't touch on that in the first one at all. So I don't feel like they were retreading ground here any more. I mean, there's a little thematic, you know, retreading of ground of the enemy. But
well, that's what I said was
the idea had barely been touched upon, much less explored. Whereas this, it was very fully explored. And I agree, it would be disappointing if third movie was just another, you know, even more armored soldiers. But in the same way that, like, Aliens is a good upgrade from Alien because we went from one alien to 70. It's a full upgrade, and I feel like that was what we got here in terms of
I said it before. I said that the Armor Wars is an inherently logical second act to a trilogy of stories introducing Iron Man to the world. The first one is the introduction of the new technology. The second one is the proliferation of the new technology. I just wish there had been something in there even to foreshadow the Mandarin the way there had been in the first movie with the Ten Rings. There was nothing foreshadowing this one.
And that was really missing. I hate that.
Do you really think they will get rid of the Mandarin?
Else, other than that, and I really think he has to be the third film. And
even Favreau, I think, said the other day.
It's fine, but once they start shooting bolts of energy, you really have to explain it.
Yeah, well, alien technology. That's what they are.
Yeah, you can explain it.
No, that's alien. But once you get to aliens, it might as well be, you know, hobbits in terms of another level of suspension of disbelief.
Rings, you know, maybe.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think
comic book movies that have succeeded have managed to keep you down to one stupid premise. I mean, that's the genius of the X-Men. It's like, if you will believe this one really stupid thing, just one,
people
we can explain
anything.
Everything.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. And I mean, it's good. So, the more suspension of disbelief you can reserve, the better.
Yeah.
So now we got this dude. We got this molecular weirdness dude, and then we have aliens. It was just like, what? Where?
Okay. Say good luck to Thor with Frost Giants and Loki and Giant Wolves and all that stuff.
Well, here's the thing. This is the thing. If, in my opinion, if it were up to me to make an Avengers movie, all you really have to do is cut Thor. Cut Thor. Granted, you're missing Thor, but your movies will work.
But I don't want to see that movie then.
Yeah,
I won't go see that movie if Thor's
Thor,
not in it.
Thor is what makes me not read Avengers comics, I think. I just don't buy the team.
You're damaged, Andrew. You're just damaged goods.
I love Thor. Yeah. I don't necessarily agree with that.
I could read a Thor comic book that didn't involve so much other stuff, but the combination was like, okay, and here's some Norse mythology on the side. And it's the same thing with Iron Man and the Mandarin. It's just like, we're going to have this like hyper sci-fi technology, and now we're going to like this pseudo-Eastern mythology.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, you always have to be careful how far to take it. Like, the animated Iron Man movie took the concept of Western tech versus Eastern myth too far, you know?
Yeah,
you have to try and find the balance.
But I want to say one thing. In the movie, the Black Widow made the point in her report that she thinks that Iron Man should be in the Avengers, but Tony Stark should not. And I agree. I do not want to see Tony Stark on the Avengers because I don't want to see Robert Downey Jr. downplayed to being just another person on the screen.
He's not going to be downplayed. Yeah. If they make an Avengers movie, he is going to be the star, probably still.
So do you think they'll make Avengers, but it won't have Robert Downey Jr., and we'll just see the Iron Man armor throughout the movie? Could they do that?
I don't know.
I doubt it.
That'd be awfully ballsy for him to do that, but maybe they could.
I don't think they will do that. I think we would more likely, honestly, you know, we're more likely to see is Robert Downey Jr. and no Iron Man. You're more likely to see that than you are
I suppose if they do go that route of making the Wasp the POV character, you could play with the concept a little where Tony Stark is there and Iron Man is there, but she doesn't know they're the same guy. So you never have to get the scenes.
Everyone on Earth knows they're the same guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. Sorry. I'm sorry.
I thought they would lead that into splitting it off and making Tony, say, okay, I'm not going to be Iron Man anymore. It's going to be Rhodey or whatever.
My bodyguard. Nobody's going to believe that.
Yeah.
Which,
not like they haven't done that in the freaking universe four times. Anyway. Okay, well, ultimately, I think, you know, my take on the film as a whole is that I didn't like it as much as the first film, but I don't like it less. And I know that doesn't make sense.
I do like it less, but I absolutely don't hate it. But
it's
not as good as the first one.
I was disappointed.
But there's nothing really wrong with it either.
People should still see it. It's good. It's worth seeing.
I don't think they're comparable, the first and the second one, just because of that origin factor. I think they're a very different type of movie, and comparing them is silly. I mean,
it's hard to do.
I don't think it's an adequate way to evaluate it. That would be a better way to put it. I don't necessarily think the
origin story has to be the story of a character.
I think especially mid movies, like this was not designed to be any sort of finale either.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I think it would be much more valid to if the next one is also not a finale, it would be much more valid to compare those two.
Mandarin.
Yeah.
Mandarin.
I don't want
the only Mandarin you're gonna see is a bowl of oranges on Tony's desk, I'm telling you.
Mandarin.
That will probably be true.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thanks, guys, for joining me for this, and everyone listening for joining us for the special edition of New Soundwave. We'll of course return.
Did everyone like it less than the first one than me?
Yes.
Yes.
Wow. So I am the voice of liking it for a change.
I liked it.
I love it.
I thought it was very good.
I think maybe we just need to make that clear. It is good. See the movie, absolutely. It's just that it's kind of the only thing I can think to say about it is that I don't think it was as good as the first one, because I can't think of any other way to detriment
it. It couldn't have lived up to the hype. There's no way.
I mean, it's... So.
Well, I thought it was fantastic, and I hate everything, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
What a
ringing endorsement.
In, Interpret that as you will. But again, so we'll return to regular New Soundwave this week, our regular live show on Wednesdays. Again, check us out, tfradio.net.
Contest.
There is a contest that we are running, so please join us. Become a friend of us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. You're going to get entered to a chance to win gift cards to
Big Bad Toy Store.
Big Bad Toy Store, as well as RC. So there you go. And also, we've got a whole plethora of shows that we're doing over there at tfradio.net. So check that out. And again, so this has been joining me, Brian Kilby, Chris Triplets, Chris McFeely, and Ender, and myself. JD,
I promise to start hating things again soon, everybody. I'm sorry.
Thank you. I feel a little awkward. Like, I think I might vomit. So, thank you. all right. Well, thank you guys for joining us. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
This has been New Soundwave with your hosts, JD Church, Ender, John DeLuna, Rob Springer, Chris Triplett, and Brian Kilby. New Soundwave is a Radio Free Cybertron production. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Copyright 2010 Radio Free Cybertron.